Chapter 9. Persecutors. A short pause, and he shouted out a few doggerel rhymes the last he had ever learned. He rose in bed, drew up his withered limbs, and rolled about in uncouth positions. He was acting, he was at the theater. A minute's silence, and he murmured the burden of some roaring song. He had reached the old house at last. How hot the room was. He had been ill, very ill, but he was well now, and happy. Fill up his glass. Who was that, dashed it from his lips? It was the same persecutor, that had followed him before. He fell back upon his pillow and moaned aloud. A short period of oblivion, and he was wandering through a tedious maze of low-arched rooms so low, sometimes, that he must creep upon his hands and knees to make his way along. It was close and dark, and every way he turned, some obstacle impeded his progress. There were insects too, hideous crawling things, with eyes that stared upon him, and filled the very air around, glistening horribly amidst the thick darkness of the place. The walls and ceiling were alive with reptiles. The vault expanded to an enormous size. Frightful figures flitted to and fro, and the faces of men he knew, rendered hideous by gibing and mouthing, peered out from among them. They were searing him with heated irons, and binding his head with cords till the blood started, and he struggled madly for life. At the close of one of these paroxysms, when I had with great difficulty held him down in his bed, he sank into what appeared to be a slumber. Overpowered with watching and exertion, I had closed my eyes for a few minutes, when I felt a violent clutch on my shoulder. I awoke instantly. He had raised himself up, so as to seat himself in bed. A dreadful change had come over his face, but consciousness had returned, for he evidently knew me. The child, who had been long since disturbed by his ravings, rose from its little bed, and ran towards its father, screaming with fright. The mother hastily caught it in her arms, lest he should injure it in the violence of his insanity. But, terrified by the alteration of his features, stood transfixed by the bedside. He grasped my shoulder convulsively, and, striking his breast with the other hand, made a desperate attempt to articulate. It was unavailing. He extended his arm towards them, and made another violent effort. There was a rattling noise in the throat, a glare of the eye, a short stifled groan, and he fell back dead. It would afford us the highest gratification to be enabled to record Mr. Pickwick's opinion of the foregoing anecdote. We have little doubt that we should have been enabled to present it to our readers, but for a most unfortunate occurrence. Mr. Pickwick had replaced on the table the glass which, during the last few sentences of the tale, he had retained in his hand, and had just made up his mind to speak. Indeed, we have the authority of Mr. Snodgrass's notebook for stating that he had actually opened his mouth, when the waiter entered the room, and said, "Some gentlemen, sir." It has been conjectured that Mr. Pickwick was on the point of delivering some remarks which would have enlightened the world, if not the Thames, when he was thus interrupted. For he gazed sternly on the waiter's countenance, and then looked round on the company generally, as if seeking for information relative to the newcomers. Said Mr. Winkle, rising, "some friends of mine showed them in." "Very pleasant fellows," added Mr. Winkle, after the waiter had retired. "Officers of the 97th, whose acquaintance I made rather oddly this morning. You will like them very much." Mr. Pickwick's equanimity was at once restored. The waiter returned, and ushered three gentlemen into the room. "Lieutenant Tappleton," said Mr. Winkle, "Lieutenant Tappleton, Mr. Pickwick, Dr. Payne, Mr. Pickwick, Mr. Snodgrass, you have seen before, my friend Mr. Tubman, Dr. Payne, Dr. Slammer, Mr. Pickwick, Mr. Tubman, Dr. Slam," here Mr. Winkle suddenly paused, for strong emotion was visible on the countenance both of Mr. Tubman and the doctor. "I have met this gentleman before," said the doctor, with marked emphasis. "Indeed," said Mr. Winkle. And that person too, if I am not mistaken, apostrophe said the doctor, bestowing a scrutinizing glance on the green-coated stranger. I think I gave that person a very pressing invitation last night, which he thought proper to decline. Apostrophe saying which the doctor scowled magnanimously on the stranger, and whispered his friend Lieutenant Appleton. You don't say so, apostrophe said that gentleman, at the conclusion of the whisper. I do, indeed, apostrophe replied Dr. Slammer. You are bound to kick him on the spot, apostrophe murmured the owner of the camp stool, with great importance. Do be quiet, Payne, apostrophe interposed the lieutenant. Will you allow me to ask you, sir, apostrophe he said, addressing Mr. Pickwick, who was considerably mystified by this very unpolite byplay, will you allow me to ask you, sir, whether that person belongs to your party? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, sir, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, he is a guest of ours. Apostrophe, he is a member of your club, or I am mistaken. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the lieutenant inquiringly. Certainly not, apostrophe responded Mr. Pickwick. And never wears your club button? Apostrophe, apostrophe said the lieutenant. No, never. Apostrophe, apostrophe replied the astonished Mr. Pickwick. Lieutenant Appleton turned round to his friend Dr. Slammer, with a scarcely perceptible shrug of the shoulder, as if implying some doubt of the accuracy of his recollection. The little doctor looked wrathful, but confounded, and Mr. Payne gazed with a ferocious aspect on the beaming countenance of the unconscious Pickwick. Sir, apostrophe said the doctor, suddenly addressing Mr. Tubman, in a tone which made that gentleman start as perceptibly as if a pin had been cunningly inserted in the calf of his leg, you were at the ball here last night. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Tubman gasped a faint affirmative, looking very hard at Mr. Pickwick all the while. That person was your companion, apostrophe said the doctor, pointing to the still unmoved stranger. Mr. Tubman admitted the fact. Now, sir, apostrophe said the doctor to the stranger, I ask you once again, in the presence of these gentlemen, whether you choose to give me your card, and to receive the treatment of a gentleman, or whether you impose upon me the necessity of personally chastising you on the spot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, stay, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick, I really cannot allow this matter to go any further without some explanation. Tubman, recount the circumstances. Apostrophe, Mr. Tubman, thus solemnly adjured, stated the case in a few words, touched slightly on the borrowing of the coat, expatiated largely on its having been done after dinner, wound up with a little penitence on his own account, and left the stranger, to clear himself as best he could. He was apparently about to proceed to do so, when Lieutenant Appleton, who had been eyeing him with great curiosity, said with considerable scorn, Haven't I seen you at the theater, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, apostrophe replied the unabashed stranger. He is a strolling actor. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the lieutenant contemptuously. Turning to Dr. Slammer, he acts in the piece that the officers of the 52nd get up at the Rochester Theater tomorrow night. You cannot proceed in this affair, Slammer, impossible. Apostrophe, quite. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the dignified Payne. Sorry to have placed you in this disagreeable situation, apostrophe said Lieutenant Appleton, addressing Mr. Pickwick. Allow me to suggest that the best way of avoiding a recurrence of such scenes in future will be to be more select in the choice of your companions. Good evening, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and the lieutenant bounced out of the room. And allow me to say, sir, apostrophe said the irascible Dr. Payne, that if I had been Appleton, or if I had been Slammer, I would have pulled your nose, sir, and the nose of every man in this company. I would, sir, every man. Payne is my name, Sir Dr. Payne of the 43rd. Good evening, sir. apostrophe having concluded this speech, and uttered the last three words in a loud key, he stalked majestically after his friend, closely followed by Dr. Slammer, who said nothing, but contented himself by withering the company with a look. Rising rage and extreme bewilderment had swelled the noble breast of Mr. Pickwick, almost to the bursting of his waistcoat, during the delivery of the above defiance. He stood transfixed to the spot, gazing on vacancy. The closing of the door recalled him to himself. He rushed forward with fury in his looks, and fire in his eye. His hand was upon the lock of the door. In another instant it would have been on the throat of Dr. Payne of the 43rd, had not Mr. Snodgrass seized his revered leader by the coattail, and dragged him backwards. "Restrain him," apostrophe cried Mr. Snodgrass. "Winkle, Tupman, he must not peril his distinguished life in such a cause as this." "Apostrophe, let me go," apostrophe said Mr. Pickwick. "Hold him tight," apostrophe shouted Mr. Snodgrass. And by the united efforts of the whole company, Mr. Pickwick was forced into an armchair. "Leave him alone," apostrophe said the green-coated stranger. "Brandy and water, jolly old gentleman, lots of pluck, swallow this, ah. Capital stuff." Apostrophe, having previously tested the virtues of a bumper, which had been mixed by the dismal man, the stranger applied the glass to Mr. Pickwick's mouth, and the remainder of its contents rapidly disappeared. There was a short pause. The brandy and water had done its work. The amiable countenance of Mr. Pickwick was fast recovering its customary expression. "They are not worth your notice," apostrophe said the dismal man. "You are right, sir," apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, "they are not. I am ashamed to have been betrayed into this warmth of feeling. Draw your chair up to the table, sir." Apostrophe, the dismal man readily complied. A circle was again formed round the table, and harmony once more prevailed. Some lingering irritability appeared to find a resting place in Mr. Winkle's bosom, occasioned possibly by the temporary abstraction of his coat, though it is scarcely reasonable to suppose that so slight a circumstance can have excited even a passing feeling of anger in a Pickwickian's breast. With this exception, their good humor was completely restored, and the evening concluded with the conviviality with which it had begun. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.